You're listening to Sunnyside Up, a B2B podcast that brings you the juiciest insights from go-to-market leaders and practitioners.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Sunnyside Up. I'm your host, Chris Moody. Today, I'm very excited to talk to Emily Butler on balancing brand and demand generation. It's a topic near and dear to my heart, Emily, so really excited. And Emily is a Senior Director of Marketing at Honeywell Aerospace Technologies. So Emily, tell everyone about yourself.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chris. I've come from a 24-year background in B2B marketing. I came from an agency background first. So I was in agency for 20-plus years. I thought I was an agency lifer, and then I made the move over to Honeywell and joined kind of the corporate side of things. So my background's really in digital marketing demand generation for some big brands all the way down to very small startups that were then later acquired by big brands. I've kind of done it all: strategy, content strategy, ABM, SEO, SEM, you name it, website conversion optimization. And I've worked with brands like Symantec, Spirent, ServiceNow, and any number of them, all usually in the tech space. And I am a third-gen Arizona State University grad, go Devils. I'm the wife to a first responder, and I have two teenage kids that keep me very busy, both very competitive soccer players. So my second home is a soccer field most days and weekends. So that's a little bit about me.
Oh, that's awesome. Arizona State, I mean, you have James Harden. I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina. So Herb Sendek went from NC State to Arizona State. So yeah, we have our connections there. But, you know, one thing I'd love to start with, what awesome projects are you working on now?
It's kind of hard to pick. We build such cool stuff at Honeywell. But what's top of mind for me right now is runway safety. So there's been an uptick in close calls on the runway. And tragically, you know, in the beginning of January, five people were killed when a jetliner with 300 plus people on board collided with a Coast Guard aircraft on a Tokyo runway. It's absolutely tragic, but absolutely avoidable. Honeywell and our industry peers, not just Honeywell, have cockpit solutions that can be, you know, onboard cockpit solutions that are FAA certified. They're ready, they're available today, but so few airlines are actually using them. Because what we often need to see is a mandate before this type of technology is adopted. So we're running a campaign right now that's focused on our policymakers and influencing our policymakers in Congress and the FAA and just across our industry to take action to require this type of cockpit alerting technology on board our commercial aircraft. So they know, you know, they can get alerts, the pilots can, before they take off or they land on a wrong runway or a wrong taxiway. And we're just really advocating for policymakers to take action. What I think is super cool about this is we get to do some very hyper-targeted marketing in this campaign, but there's also this broad awareness building among the flying public. So this is something that's of concern for everybody who steps onto an airplane. And it's pretty cool as a marketer to just be able to work on something that, you know, it's like, this is ultimately going to save lives. And that's just a very cool thing.
That is really cool. I mean, look, I can count a ton of times where folks I've worked with or myself have said, look, this is not life or death in reference to marketing in our projects, but yours definitely is that.
Yeah. One of my favorite clients, you know, when I would get stressed out, he'd say, Emily, but nobody died. And, you know, in this case, it's like, this is life and death. This is real.
Yeah. Well, powerful impact there. You mentioned agency life, and it's a very different world working at an agency and then going to a large corporation. I've been acquired by Oracle before. I've worked at GE. Yeah. So I have some similar experiences to you.
Yeah, you too, huh?
Yeah. So, you know, how has that transition changed your approach to ABM or demand gen or lead gen? And what are some of the insights you'd like to share?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I always used to say like, I'm on the dark side, you know, agency is the dark side. I'm not really sure anymore if I like came from the dark side or I've come to the dark side, but I've certainly gained, I think, just a new level of empathy for my former clients, particularly just when it comes to like drumming up budget for new ideas and POCs and experiments, especially if you're halfway through the year. Because in an agency, you can shop your idea among multiple clients, and you're going to find somebody that has just the vision. They're going to grasp it. They've got the budget and they can give it a go. But when you're at an organization that's this size, I think what I've had to do is really give myself the grace to learn how to navigate the organization and understand the cycles that it takes to get like buy-in for new ideas and tools. So that's kind of one thing that I think is different. But a lot of things, you know, some things are just that much simpler. And particularly, I think when it comes to ABM and demand gen, it's a lot easier to align with sales from inside the organization. At an agency, you know, you're really close to the marketing team and you're the right hand of your marketing client, right? But you're just so many times you're more removed and you're at an arm's length from the sales organization and you're even further from the customers. So you might get feedback from sales, but it's like a game of telephone, right? You're getting something that the customer told the sales team tells the marketer, the marketer tells another marketer, and then it may finally get to you, but it's not what was communicated initially, right? It's not exactly what you would have heard if you could reach out directly. And so I think in-house, I get a lot more regular feedback just straight from sales. For any campaign that we're running, we have a regular, you know, system or what we call an MOS. We're big on acronyms here. A regular MOS with the sales to report back on results, to just gather their input on what they're hearing from the customers, when they're going to be meeting with the customers next. You know, what messages do we think as a whole between sales and marketing the target account needs to hear? And then we can adjust accordingly. So I think that alignment really makes all the difference in ABM and just takes our personalization to a whole new level, especially when it comes to our marketing to one campaigns. Like that's where this is just a big difference for me.
That's great. Awesome differences that you highlighted there. I do think folks like to pretend that there aren't advantages of being at a larger company, but yeah, there certainly are, right? Like some things are easier. So we have both worked at companies. Every single listener has worked at companies that have been obsessed with leads and finding ROI, mm-hmm. very important in demand gen. We know that. And sometimes that's at the expense of building the brand. And the more we learn about brand, even today, we know that brand drives a huge portion of demand gen, even if we can't measure it. So what are some of the challenges for finding that balance and maybe some strategies you've used to address them?
You know, finding that balance, kind of, as you said, that balance between brand and demand, it's like the question of the hour. Everybody's struggling with this today. And, you know, when you think about, and I'm sure many marketers are in the same boat, you know, they've spent the last year kind of trimming budgets, right? And we're in a certain economic climate and every single budget item is under microscope and we're all looking to do more with less. Like this is what the boat that everybody's in. And when you're in that boat, you know, people tend to focus more on demand than brand, and brand like moves into this, oh, it's nice to have, but it's not a need to have right now. Like right now we need revenue, right? And yes, we do. We absolutely need revenue. And so they turn to that demand gen camp and it's, you know, very results driven and very much the, if I can track it, then I can do it mentality. I can prove it. And so, you know, you go and you focus on those ready to buy leads at the bottom of funnel. They're solution aware and they're in market and we help them to understand our value prop and we address their objectives and we're ultimately, you know, driving that short-term growth. And that's hugely important. But I think it's a really big mistake to just ignore the brand marketing component. It's not optional, even when you've got, you know, pressures from a budget situation. Those down funnel prospects, I guess, and you know, the ones that you're targeting in demand gen, they didn't come out of nowhere, right? You're in their consideration set because of your brand. And your brand marketing is going to attract that wider pool of potential customers that are maybe at the top of the funnel. Maybe they don't understand yet that they have a problem or they don't know how to solve their problem. And it's our job then to build that long-term worth for our brand through thought leadership and positioning and plant the seeds that are going to align with their future goals. Like may not be what they have to do today, but it might be what they need to do with you tomorrow. So I think if you're not investing in your brand today, you're really setting yourself up for a demand problem later. So ultimately, you have to do both.
Yeah, that's great advice. And, you know, another trap that that reminds me of, I have worked at organizations. I will not say you have. I bet you have. But, you know, I've worked in organizations where folks hit a lead target or an MQL target and marketing high fives and celebrates and they're comped on that. That's happened in orgs I've worked in. And there's not a true understanding of the customer and the entire journey and how to nurture the customer throughout, because there is that abrupt give it to sales, hope for the best type of thing. So what advice would you have to start to shift a team's mindset away from chasing leads to really understanding the customer?
I feel like MQL is becoming like a dirty word in my mind. It's like, you know, first thing is just is stop measuring MQLs and start measuring your pipeline and revenue. I think MQLs have just become a vanity metric. You know, we used to say like impressions, they're a vanity metric. Well, I feel like MQLs are a vanity metric today. And so just because you're hitting lead goals, if that's how you're measured, that doesn't mean that those leads are going to become customers, right? And marketing, like measuring your marketing team on leads, just further distances you from sales. It creates more friction between marketing and sales. It creates more finger pointing. These are not good leads. And then it's just a lot of justifications and it's a waste of time. Where if you're measuring on revenue, you know, you're really aligning more with sales and you're all working toward a common goal. So I think people are always going to sit there and they're going to measure, you know, who filled out a form and did they become an MQL and all these things. But at the end of the day, if your goal is pipeline, your goal is revenue, and that's the metric that you're reporting up, then you're going to do a hell of a lot better. I think the second thing that you need to do to kind of shift and really understand your customer journey is just get to know your customer. Conduct, you know, VOC sessions with your customers, join sales calls. I think the big thing is just don't guess at their journey. Ask them about their journey. Don't guess at what problems they have. Ask. I mean, I'm going to say it again. It's like ask about the gaps that they have. What would have accelerated their decision? I mean, you're really like on this reconnaissance mission when it comes to getting to know your customer. And what you're ultimately looking to do is prioritize the moments that matter most in their journey, because you can't do everything. You need to document the moments and you need to choose where to focus your resources, because you can't do it all. So you got to make some tough choices. And I would say, like, keep a list of all those moments that you're ignoring, because you might want to go back to them later. They might become more important later. But if acquisition is your biggest concern, you're going to lean towards like more of those awareness and consideration moments. If retention is your concern, you're going to focus more on those post-purchase moments. The third thing I would say is probably your value props, just both at the brand and the product level. We're constantly working to sharpen our value props. I think it's really important to align that value with the customer needs and then like determine, is this something they're going to pay for? And you've got to challenge assumptions. Like when you're working with product owners, product management, like it's their baby. They love it. Nobody wants to be told they've got an ugly baby. So you've got to challenge the assumptions. You need to revisit the value props really regularly and, you know, really determine, is everything, you know, is a promise crisp? Is it compelling? Is it competitive? Customers, you know, things change at the customer. So you need to revisit it often. And I think that really helps you with your short-term revenue goals and your long-term branding, is just making sure your value props are dialed in and regularly addressed. And then the last thing that kind of pertains to that is, you know, you've got your value prop, but don't forget your creative. Every campaign, the success of every campaign really depends on creative. And we all focus so much on like targeting the right audience, reaching the right audience in the right place at the right time. And that's super important. It's hugely important. But you don't want to blow that all up by showing that the bad creative, right? The crummy creative. You've got to have that really nicely dialed in, and you need a lot of creative variations to make any campaign successful. So you've got to plan for that. One of the things that we're doing is exploring just, you know, new ways to scale up our creative and new ways to get efficiency. AI is, of course, big for everybody right now. And that's something, you know, we're exploring how to use that so that we can create even just, you know, we're creating more headlines or whatever it may be that helps to really get our creative, you know, amped up.
Great advice. I mean, the creative one was, I honestly wasn't expecting that, because the next question I was going to dive into some of the complexities of aerospace, right? And yeah. What you have to deal with. But I think that's such an important takeaway for our listeners. And then the other that, you know, I would italicize, bold, highlight, whatever we would do to stress that. Talking to customers, I mean, mm-hmm. there is no substitute. And many customers love being involved in helping you with value props and some of that. So some of my favorite mm-hmm. calls, when you build trust with a customer and have those insights, and then you can take things to them and test and get their feedback and hear what they're yeah. saying. Well, here's what your competitor did that I really didn't like. And here's what someone in customer success did that I loved. And you yeah. need to put that in front of me on the website. I shouldn't find out after I buy it. Like, some of those takeaways,
yeah.
you aren't going to find that anywhere else.
Yeah, those little nuggets are gold. So
yeah, totally. Well, let's dive into aerospace. I mean, I have okay. So GE Aviation, you know, I was there for a while. I know a little oh. bit, but you have some very unique challenges in mm-hmm. the aerospace industry. So you have product availability, FAA certification, lots yeah. of things that play a huge role in messaging. You talked earlier about life and death projects. I mean, there are some huge initiatives that I'm sure you're a part of, but how do you think about a marketing strategy that factors in all the things you want to know about the customer when you may have supply chain issues and customer yeah. expectations that change overnight because of something that was on the news?
Yeah. Yeah. Supply chain. So that's definitely like the elephant in the room, right? Aerospace is one of the most unique and fascinating industries that I've worked in. I think in terms of supply chain, it's like the most complicated network that I've ever encountered. And the pandemic, you know, really did us no favors. It didn't do anybody favors, but it certainly disrupted just global supply chains. And that's caused, you know, shortages of critical components or delays and such. And customers, you know, they never want to hear that they can't get their aircraft back in the air because a part isn't available, or they can't get delivery of their new fleet because, you know, something is held up in the supply chain. And so the industry is really looking at how do you, you know, diversifying our suppliers, digitization, automation, those are all a big focus for the aerospace industry, because I mean, this is something that affects everybody in aerospace. Where that leaves marketing is, you know, we also can't ignore that elephant that's in the room. I talked a little bit before about being tied out with sales and how important that is. But as a marketer in the aerospace industry, we have to be tied out with sales. We also have to be tied out with our ISC team, you know, with our supply chain team, because we've got to focus on building demand for products that we can actually deliver. And that can change like very, very quickly. And so the last thing, you know, you want to do is spin up this like hyper-targeted LinkedIn campaign that's focused on like the best list of open opportunities. Like, these are ones that we can absolutely help you close. And it's for a particular product, and you launch that LinkedIn ad, and then you get customers just flaming in the comments because, you know, and sit with things like, yeah, I'd love to buy, you know, that product XYZ, but, you know, it would be great if you could actually deliver it. And this happens, like this has happened to us. It's a very real situation that we face. So we have to work really closely with sales and ISC, and we have to be in the know. And transparency is key, not only among our teams, but with our customers. So, you know, our supply chain recovery impacts our brand. And one of the things that we're doing right now is adding more of the brand messaging, you know, further down funnel to bring transparency to what we're doing to fix the supply chain. And ultimately, that's going to help us close deals. But it really comes down to being transparent and providing that information to customers on a regular basis with regular updates.
You mentioned brand moving downstream. So some of the customer mm-hmm. messaging. I love the tie-ins with the different teams and how much alignment mm-hmm. is required. I think those are things that people always oversimplify and think that it's a given, or no, we told them we're aligned. But how do you go about selling branding internally? We talked about the balance mm-hmm. of brand and demand gen. I think anytime here's ROI, here's how many leads yeah. you can get, how many accounts, everyone's like, yes, high five. But something that may be more touchy-feely and involving your creative that you yeah. talked about, up-leveling, how do you build that buy-in?
It's a good question. It's a tough one, right? The biggest tip I can probably give is that you have to choose your moment, there are turning points that you're going to have in your business. That could be like arrival of new leadership. Sometimes the what's driving that focus on brand and it's your time to go in and really push for brand is when you're in a situation where you have customers that are not so happy all the time, right? So when they are seeing a problem and you need to deliver more of these brand level messages, that's an opportunity to go in and push your agenda there. So those turning points are good times to broach the subject of brand. I also think that it's really important to not think of brand as like, it's just your ad campaign that you're going to roll out this year. I think your brand really starts with internal marketing. So for your brand to be successful, you know, your entire employee base needs to believe the message. They need to live it. They need to breathe it. You're not, you know, your brand is about every touch point internally and externally. And I think that starts with that emotional connection to your brand that you build with your employees and letting that brand and that connection inform how they do their jobs and how they talk to their customers. And at Honeywell, you know, we're future shapers. And that is very much just in the fabric of our company. And that's the position that we live and breathe as, you know, as being part of Honeywell. So I think, you know, choose your moment, start with your internal marketing, and you're going to get there with what you need to help keep your brand in focus and balance that demand gen and brand.
It's a great approach. I'm very excited that you're at Honeywell because you're bringing a lot of that positive energy into a company that's been doing amazing things for a long time. So it's always good to keep it fresh and innovative, prioritize creative, a lot of things you hit on. So
yeah.
Kudos to you.
Thanks. Yeah, it's exciting. I'm having fun. I've got an amazing team around me and it's really, I'm surrounded by people who are literally, they're like rocket scientists. You know, you get to do so many cool things and just the innovation that comes out of the company is amazing. And it lets you be kind of more innovative with your marketing too.
Awesome. Well, we'll bring our segue back to the runway. So we're in our final stretch here. We're landing the plane. We have a couple questions we close with. We usually tackle good reads and good people. So the first question, is there a book, blog, newsletter, website, or video that you would recommend to our listeners?
Yes, there is. So I received a book as part of a leadership program here at Honeywell, and it was called The Microstress Effect by Rob Cross. And it is an absolute must read for high performers, you know, people who are at risk for burnout in their careers or their lives and spend 20 plus years in an agency, you'll be there. So I read this book and I felt like the author just like opened up a window into my life and peered in. It's got a bunch of really practical tips for just recognizing and dealing with all the little stressors that pile up and wreak havoc in your life. So whether you're a marketer or you just have you're a high performer, stressful career, it's a great, great book.
Awesome. I love that one. I'm going to have to check that out. That sounds very relevant to my interest with everything going on in our lives. Okay, the next question, good people. Are there any folks that come to mind that are in the B2B space that you think we should have on the podcast?
Yes. Actually, I don't know if this person's been on your podcast before. Chris Walker at Refine Labs.
Okay.
He shares you can follow him on LinkedIn if you're not already, but he shares some really interesting stuff on just demand gen, on dark social content strategy. Truth be told, I believe that his agency picked up one of my old clients as well. Yeah. So I've lost business to him, but really an innovative thinker. So I would highly suggest him. And then I would actually recommend one of my colleagues at Honeywell, Allison Wyrick. She just moved into a director of innovation role at Mother Honeywell. So she's not in aerospace technologies anymore, but she's at corporate. And she may be, quite honestly, like one of the most talented people I've ever met when it comes to understanding your customer. Like her VOC sessions are just a masterclass. She's phenomenal. She's fun. And I think her brain works in an entirely different way. So she's somebody I would say, talk to her about VOC. She's amazing at it.
Great suggestions. In the small world category, Chris Walker and I actually worked at the same company in Morris, North Carolina way back when.
So oh my goodness.
Yeah, the world's super small. So great suggestions there. And then the very last question and the most important one, how can people get in touch with you after they listen to the show?
Yeah, Yeah. So you can hit me up on LinkedIn. I do answer my message inboxes there. And then you can always just reach me at Honeywell, emily.butler@honeywell.com.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your time, Emily.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris.
Today's episode is made possible by Demandbase. Demandbase is smarter GTM for B2B brands to help marketing and sales teams spot the juiciest opportunities earlier and progress them faster. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Sunny Side Up. If you liked what you heard, please rate and review us and subscribe to our show on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you consume podcasts. You can also find us on YouTube and Demandbase TV.